Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
And we're speaking today with California's first Surgeon General, Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris. She's a pediatrician, author, and renowned thought leader on the science of childhood trauma and adverse childhood events, which she examines in her popular 2014 TED Talk, as well as her acclaimed book, The Deepest Well, Healing the Effects of Long-Term Childhood Adversity. Dr. Burke-Harris received her bachelor's degree from the University of California, Berkeley, her MD from UC Davis, and her master's in public health from Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. She completed her residency in pediatrics at Stanford. Dr. Burke-Harris, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you so much for having me.
And congratulations. What an important appointment and position as California's first ever Surgeon General. And that selection, I think, speaks so powerfully to the intent on the part of the, California's leadership to address a number of public health issues in obviously America's most populous and diverse state. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about Governor Newsom's decision to create the role of state Surgeon General and choosing you as the first physician to hold that post. And were there any specific policy initiatives that he's directed you to address? Tell our listeners, if you will.
Sure, absolutely. So in his executive order creating the role of California Surgeon General, Governor Newsom actually wrote in the executive order a recognition that early social determinants of health are some of the root causes of some of the most serious and expensive healthcare challenges that is facing our state. And he recognized that these challenges are not only serious, but inequitable. And they include adverse childhood experiences and toxic stress. And specifically, when he created the role, he created the role of state Surgeon General specifically to marshal the insights and the energy of our medical professionals, academics, public servants, and everyday Californians to be able to address these public, critical public health challenges. And so it really was the governor's visionary leadership to recognize that while we are, as a state, addressing, you know, we have the Department of Social Services addressing, you know, child maltreatment. We have all of these systems, you know, healthcare, all of these pieces that are addressing each component of these issues. One of the pieces that are critical is to have this high level empowered leadership to work in a cross-sector way to bring some real innovative approaches to addressing some of our most difficult public health challenges.
Well, congratulations to California, I think we would say, on this one. But Dr. Burke-Harris, we now know that one of the leading but least understood, perhaps least talked about outside of maybe a small healthcare circle, causes of poor health and reduced life expectancy in the United States is something that you have really become one of the nation's thought leaders, really knowledge leaders on. And that is that exposure to trauma in childhood has very dramatic, very far-reaching, and really dose-related effects on health outcomes. For our listeners, can you help them understand what you mean by trauma, toxic stress, adverse childhood events, or ACEs, as we've come to know them, and the toll that it is exacting on population health right as we sit here?
Yeah, so I think that for many of us, the notion that experiencing having difficult experiences in childhood may increase the risk for depression or substance use later on in life, It feels fairly intuitive, right? It's hard to see a news or a media article or even watch a movie or a TV program without seeing that storyline and that narrative that early adversity may be associated with later life health and mental health challenges. But what's really fascinating was that We learned from a very large-scale study that was conducted by the CDC and Kaiser Permanente about the strong association between stressful or traumatic events in childhood and not only these health and behavioral consequences, but also some of the leading causes of death in the United States, like heart disease, cancer, chronic lung disease, and even Alzheimer's. And this work, our understanding of this, comes from this groundbreaking study that was conducted by the CDC and Kaiser Permanente called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study that was conducted now over two decades ago, where they looked at 10 categories of adverse childhood experiences. And these include physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, physical or emotional neglect, or growing up in a household where a parent was mentally ill, substance dependent, incarcerated, where there was parental separation or divorce, or domestic violence. So those are the 10 traditional adverse childhood experiences. And what we now know in the past, the science that's emerged in the last two decades shows us that the mechanism by which this happens, right? The least common denominator is that when an individual experiences, you know, has these experiences, and especially during childhood, because childhood is this special time when our brains and bodies are just developing, the repeated activation of our body's biological stress response, releasing stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, right, actually changes the development of children's brains and bodies. And this is what leads to the increased health risk. And it's known as the toxic stress response, this overactivity of our biological stress response leading to increased risk of health problems is what's now known as the toxic stress response. And so toxic stress is really this kind of root cause of many of the most serious and expensive health challenges that we're facing in our nation.
Well, thank you so much for that overview. And I think some of us learn through studies, and you mentioned the 1990s seminal study that came up, but others are really, it's about storytelling that really impact them. And, you know, and you had this whole issue was brought home to you by a young patient named Diego. And I'm wondering if you could just share that story with our listeners. I think it might help galvanize, as it did with you, the challenges, the issues, the opportunities.
Yes, I wrote about Diego in my book. And so really for me as a clinician, as a pediatrician, I didn't learn about any of the science when I was in medical school or residency, right? And, you know, like, I did my residency at Stanford.
Pretty good school.
Like, it's not a shabby place.
No slouching there.
But I really didn't learn about this science. For even though this research was conducted in 1997, but really for me, as a pediatrician working in a vulnerable community in San Francisco, what I was seeing clinically was that my patients who, as I was getting their history and hearing history of adversities that my patient had experienced, I happened to notice that my patients with the most significant histories of adversity also happened to have the worst health outcomes, whether it was asthma or, you know, behavioral problems or even autoimmune disease.
Right.
And really the kind of striking issue that stopped me in my tracks was, you know, one day I was in clinic and I had a new patient whom I called Diego in the book. And this was a 7-year-old boy who came to see me for regular physical. Mm-hmm. And his school had told his mom that he might have ADHD, so he needed to see a doctor. And so she brought him in. And as I was examining him and getting the history, I noted that he had lots of challenges with, you know, behavior and attention. But there were a couple of other things that I noticed. He also had asthma. He also had, you know, eczema, which is skin irritation. But when I measured his height and weight, his height was the average for a four-year-old boy, which was striking because he was 7 years old. And when I did a more detailed history, what I learned was that he had experienced a sexual assault at age four and essentially stopped growing. And as a doctor, you can imagine, I was just absolutely shocked. And as I was working with my colleagues, you know, the endocrinologist who specializes in hormones, all of these, I said, you know, have you ever heard of this before, that a trauma might be the reason that this boy is not growing? Right? I've heard of malnutrition. You know, I've heard of kids who don't grow because of, you know, a brain tumor. But, and so really, that's what caused me to immerse myself in the science about how trauma and early adversity affects the developing brains and bodies of kids.
Well, Dr. Burke-Harris, if you will, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about the mechanisms of how trauma and toxic stress in childhood literally changes your biologic makeup and even your DNA structure. You, as somebody who also, and you write wonderfully about your experiences in the lab as a researcher, have done a deep dive into these biologic mechanics of how traumatic events in childhood can affect the trajectory of your long-term health. And you really don't sugarcoat your findings, which I think we appreciate very much. In your book, 9 out of 10 of the leading causes of death in the United States are directly linked to some kind of childhood trauma or adversity. So our listeners, I think, are really interested in really hearing some of the science behind this reality.
Yeah, so I think that our increased lay understanding of how adverse childhood experiences can lead to this overactivity of the stress response called the toxic stress response, and how that can ultimately lead to changes in, for example, brain development in children, right? That, I think, it builds off of our understanding of the last several decades of brain biology and how there's much more that we know and understand now about how critical the early years are in developing in brain development and in actually shaping what we call the developmental trajectory, right? The subsequent development of the brain in response to experiences in early childhood. So that's really been the foundation of a lot of this research. But one of the things that's really fascinating is advances in scientific research, like functional MRIs and, you know, genomics and metabolomics, has allowed us now to be able to measure things that we could never measure before. And one of those, so what we now understand is that early adversity, adverse childhood experiences, is also associated with changes in the way our hormones, right, are released and how they act on the brain and body. And that we change the amount of hormones that may be released and how they're activated. It also affects the development of our immune system, right? And we know that many of the leading causes of death are associated with diseases of chronic inflammation, and high doses of early adversity actually changes the way the immune system works, leading to greater risk of inflammation, and then also with more difficulty regulating the immune system. And part of the way all of those things happen, the changes to the brain, the changes to the body, the immune system, hormonal system, is because high doses of adversity actually can lead to changes in the way our DNA is read and transcribed, something that's called epigenetic regulation. And here's the thing, when you change the DNA, it changes the way that cells in the brain, the immune system, the hormonal system react for the entire lifetime, right? And that these are all now part of what we understand to be the toxic stress response, which is, you know, this this neuro, endocrine, immune, and genetic regulatory changes. And the thing that I want to highlight, which is so exciting, the most important exciting part to me, is that these advances in research are now pointed at and targeting what are the factors and intervention that can heal an overactive stress response. And so when I talk in my book about sleep, exercise, nutrition, mindfulness, mental health, and healthy relationships, it's not just because it feels good and it's, you know, it's just kind of, you know, good personal hygiene, but we're actually recognizing now that these factors, and we can measure them, reduce stress hormones, reduce inflammation, enhance neuroplasticity, which is the ability of brain cells to form new connections, and they delay cellular aging. Right. So this is an exciting new field of science and medicine.
Well, thank you for connecting all of those dots very succinctly. And I think clearly for our audience, we're speaking today with California's first Surgeon General, Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris. She's a pediatrician, author, and renowned thought leader on the science of childhood trauma and adverse childhood events, which she examines in her award-winning book, The Deepest Well, Healing and the Effects of Long-Term Childhood Adversity. Dr. Burke-Harris, you know, prior to becoming the California's first Surgeon General, you were a practicing pediatrician in an underserved community in San Francisco and founded the Center for Youth Wellness, which we'd love to hear more about. But it's an organization that's seeking to harness the power of science, clinical best practices, prevention to address worse effects of ACEs in children. And you're now on a mission to make screening for adverse childhood events as common as any other pediatric metric, along with many other opportunities and challenges you face. But tell us more about the system you're deploying in California. I think our listeners would find it of interest, the ACEs Aware initiative, which will expand these screenings across all of California.
So this is something that I am so excited about, and I have been working really closely with our teams here in Health and Human Services Agency in California. And the ACEs Aware initiative is really a first of its kind statewide initiative. Governor Newsom, when he not only created my role and appointed me, also allocated in his budget $40.8 million to reimburse providers for screening for ACEs and responding with trauma-informed care.
Oh, that's great.
And in addition, also allocated $50 million to be deployed over 3 years on training providers how to screen, how to respond with trauma-informed care, and supporting the network of, and infrastructure of connection, communication, and response that's necessary to be able to effectively screen for ACEs in primary care. Listen, here's what we know, right? What the research shows, and literally the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine just came out with a consensus report on this that was released in July. And one of the key things that we know, even as our understanding of ACEs and toxic stress continues to evolve and advance, right? Number one is that early detection and early intervention improves outcomes, right? And so how do we systematically deploy early detection and early intervention? It has to be through primary care. Because if we're waiting until, so right now, if a young person or an adult, right, has a mental health diagnosis, if they're depressed or suicidal, we say, oh, wow, let's look at your history of trauma, right?
Yeah.
But that means that biology of toxic stress, all that the stress hormones have been doing their work in that person's body for years and possibly decades before we identify, right? We're essentially identifying stage four, right? Yep. And if we look at anything else, if we look at cancer, if we look at HIV, if we look at, you know, any other public health threat, one of the most important advances has been in improving outcomes, has been doing early detection so we can do early intervention, so that our interventions can be less expensive, they're more likely to be effective, and they put less strain on our healthcare system, mm-hmm. right? And so here in California, I'm so proud, last week launched our ACEs Aware initiative, the training website where any primary care clinician can go online. So you don't even have to be from California. You can go online, sign up for the training, right? And get the best of our clinical protocols, our clinical algorithm on how to screen for ACEs, mm-hmm. how to recognize the signs of whether or not a patient may be having a toxic stress biology, mm-hmm. and how to respond with trauma-informed care.
Great.
Well, Dr. Burke-Harris, all of this requires that we think about partnerships, as you pointed out really well just now, that we think about our models of care and practice in healthcare particularly, but also really in education and in law enforcement and other systems. We think about the way we train the next generation of providers, and we have a pretty big focus on advancing models of high-performing care, integrated behavioral health, medical care, but it's everybody. It's everybody who comes in contact with children. But when we think about this issue of training specifically, share your thoughts with us on how we begin to shift our healthcare curricula to prepare our future clinicians to work in interprofessional teams that can better address the causes and the results of childhood trauma. As I think you've pointed out, this was not part of your curriculum. It is now part of curricula, and certainly, I think, within primary care, certainly mm-hmm. within the National Community Health Center Network, screening for adverse childhood events is considered a best practice and something that I think is really being implemented, even without the generous support of the governor of California, though we will look at that website and all the tools. But I know you're operating in so many arenas and pressing so many levers in this work. What are you thinking about in terms of changing the training and the curricula for the next generation of primary care providers and everybody else on the team, including the behavioral health folks?
So absolutely. I think as part of the ACEs Aware initiative, not only has our team taken the best practice of the science that until very recently wasn't in clinical practice, right? Like we right. knew from the research that right. ACEs impacted health, but we didn't have a really standardized way of implementing that clinically and developing tools for primary care clinicians to be able to screen and respond, right? And just as I talked about how advances in science mm-hmm. have really helped us now understand better than we ever have before how our environments and our experiences shape our biology, right? We also have to recognize that our clinical response, right? How do we coordinate our clinical response? Because it can't just end in the exam room. We have to, an important part of the work that is happening now, and the ACEs Aware initiative really gets to, I would hope, advance, right? Is this notion of, for example, who does what, right? How do we divide and conquer so that it's not overwhelming for any individual practitioner? And we know that trauma-informed care, team-based care, all of these things are best practices for mm-hmm. addressing the toxic stress, right? We also recognize that just when we recognize that our environment shapes our biology, then that question of, what happens in the primary care clinic, and how do we coordinate with community resources as well to make sure we bring them to bear on behalf of our patients? How are we coordinating that effort, following up for accountability and looking at outcomes? Mm-hmm. And as part of the ACEs Aware initiative that we're doing in California, we are actually creating a learning and quality improvement collaborative mm-hmm. that will be deployed in 50 clinics across our state.
Wonderful.
To advance best practices, collect data, and share those best practices with any provider around the country who wants to use them.
Wonderful. Well, that's great. You know, Dr. Burke-Harris, I was just thinking about an interview we just had with Dr. Stephen Wolf mm-hmm. From Virginia Commonwealth University, who was just released a seminal report on the fact that 25 to 64-year-olders were dying earlier. And that the mortality was just on all levels. I couldn't help but, as you were talking, thinking about we've really got to start at the youngest age of trying to change the trajectory of their life and their opportunities if we're going to turn that around, because that number has started to just decline or increase, I guess.
Life expectancy is down,
mortality is up. And I can't help but think the work that you're doing will have a profound impact over the long term. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Absolutely. Listen, everybody knows an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But one of the challenges that we see is that when you have an exposure that happens in childhood, but the outcomes that you see are typically measured in adult morbidity and mortality, right? That question of how do we make the value proposition for the investments in our systems and infrastructure that's necessary to facilitate early detection, early intervention, and transform outcomes? And how do we show, how do we know that it's transforming outcomes? And how do we show that it's transforming outcomes, right? And so this is part of the reason why using the framework and screening for adverse childhood experiences is so critically important. Because while adverse childhood experiences are not the only experiences that increase the risk for toxic stress and may impact health outcomes, you know, the ACEs don't ask about discrimination. They don't ask about separation from your parent because they were deported, right? Like, they don't ask about any of those things. However, what they do allow us to do is, because we have these very large data sets, right, where we know for an individual who has four or more ACEs, their risk of kidney disease is they're 1.7 times as likely to have kidney disease. We know that. And so that means is that if we screen everyone, we do our interventions, and then we track the health outcomes of our population, we can not only measure our improvement, and we have standardized measures that we can compare across regions, across populations, right? But we also have ability to quantify the cost because we know the annual cost of treating kidney disease. We know the annual cost of treating cardiovascular disease. And that's why the ACEs framework is not just an important tool for raising awareness, prevention, and early intervention. It's also a very important tool to establish the metrics by which we will justify our investments.
We have been speaking today with pediatrician, author, and expert on the science of childhood trauma, California's first Surgeon General, Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris. For information on the tools and screenings for ACEs in your healthcare practice, you can visit www.acesaware.org. And please stay up to date on the work of Dr. Burke-Harris by following her on Twitter at Dr. Burke-Harris. You can find her very popular TED Talk at TED.org and read her book, The Deepest Well, Healing the Effects of Long-Term Childhood Adversity. Dr. Burke-Harris, thank you so much for your tenacity, your intellectual rigor, curiosity, your dedication to improving the health of America's children and all people, and for joining us today on Conversations on Healthcare.